You're listening to Subsound Radio. We bring you streaming and live broadcasting from the capital. This is the El Arpa Podcast. Welcome to the El Arpa Podcast. It is the 1st of December. Christmas is almost here, so that means we're due another Christmas Traditions podcast like the one we did last year. But of all things birth-wise, as in the birth of our Lord, we're going to be talking about something different today, which is about dead people and death and all the things surrounding that.
Very appropriate.
A few parish notices. Our Christmas caroling session will be on next week in Guzman el Bueno, so if you're around at 7 o'clock in St. Horace's Church, we'll be beginning with our carol service at 7 p.m. sharp, so do not be late. Latecomers will not be admitted. While our Christmas raffle tickets can be bought on the website, and the top prize is a Christmas hamper with a turkey and ham. So, without further ado, part one is over now. Why am I still talking? Welcome back to the show. People are saying this is the year where people have died
the most,
even though that's kind of been disproved, that the rate of celebrities passing away isn't actually that higher compared to other years.
Yeah.
Though we have lost recently Leonard Cohen, David Bowie earlier in the year, the great a cappella singer Fidel Castro, and a few other people. So last week, was the anniversary of Lope de Vega. We'll be talking about him, who was a very prodigious writer of Spanish plays and poetry, and mm-hmm. was considered one of the great writers along the ranks of Cervantes.
Quite a few centuries ago.
Exactly, in the golden era of Spanish writing, and he was on a par as well with Shakespeare in terms of the respect, the esteem people have for him and his writing ability. Another poet passed away. Did we do a podcast on the exhibition that we went to that was related to him?
Yes, the exhibition, Clandestine Letters. We went to see that exhibition in the
Print Museum. Yeah. Exactly. Okay, so this was a controversial one, and we'll be touching on why that was in just a moment. And one more person who has passed away quite recently
was a politician.
Mm-hmm. Which was also a controversial one as well.
Mm-hmm.
So, three fascinating choices. Well, Fidel Castro as well, but we're not going to talk about him so much. You know, it's in the news at the moment, more so than the other people that we've spoken about in the introduction to this part of the show. So, you know, you're not going to miss that much if we don't touch on it. So, who do you want to start with? You have the aces in the pack, so you can decide who we start with.
Well, I think we should start with the oldest, which is Lope de Vega.
Lope de Vega.
You have some things to tell us about him.
He is, well, you probably have more because you're Spanish. It's probably compulsory to study his stuff in school.
Mm-hmm.
Is it a case of, you know, people in English-speaking schools in the United Kingdom, for example, might study Wordsworth and then vaguely recall it but never really have a true appreciation of it? Does Lope de Vega, does he have in the Spanish consciousness?
Well, I'd say that's probably the case. We all studied at school, but then if you ask somebody now, you know, what he wrote, and maybe they'll remember the odd thing, or maybe like a phrase that has remained as a catchphrase, or, you know,
exactly,
a little rhyme, something like that. But not really something, you know, it's not like the Quixote, for example.
Okay. Well, like Cervantes, the writer of Don Quixote, the book that Spanish people hate to read, you can visit his house. It's a free museum in La Pies Atocha neighborhood, Barrio of Madrid. So like Cervantes as well, his house is free to visit, or it's very cheap to enter anyway, in Alcalá de Henares. So whatever it is about those writers of that era, their houses are up for grabs. You can go see them. Yeah, well, I was there last week because I am familiar with the people who are behind Poetry Slam Madrid, and they had a Poetry Slam event last week, basically honoring Lope de Vega. All the poets did a mixture of their own work and also work by him. And there's a leaflet in the museum, that's where we had it, where they had it, and they're he's a very prodigious writer. He wrote thousands of plays, and had quite an adventurous life. He became a confidant of very important people, was married twice, became a priest or some kind of religious figure in later life as well. And
so he ticked all the 17th century boxes.
Well, exactly. Yeah. He was a devout Christian, a romancer, and a prodigious writer. His plays, by all accounts, are what people appreciate more of his canon compared to his literature or his poetry. I don't know if that's a fair comment, but that's what I picked up on when I was there. People, whenever his name comes up, people always kind of say his work is very complex. Is it complex because it's written in old Spanish in the way Shakespearean English is not current English, or is it complex because it's maybe abstract, or it's
well, I think it's always a little bit difficult to read writers from that era, because of the language, which is quite different, and also because a lot of the time, well, they're like witty or sarcastic or whatever, but in a way that refer to things that are not always familiar to us nowadays. Yes. Although some of them are, some of them are like universal things, like, jokes about people or characters or whatever. But I think a lot of it just goes
straight over our heads.
Yeah, a little bit, I would say. And sometimes that sort of like pulls people away from...
Well, humor doesn't date very well.
No, it doesn't, I don't think.
No, especially... I mean, Shakespeare's comedies are terrible, if I dare say that.
Ooh, you're going to get shot for that.
Not in Ireland, that's all I say. Okay, so that's a little bit of a done and dusted. If you want to find out more, read his poetry. We're not going to synthesize it for you, because what's the point in that? I mean, discover his work for yourself. So on to the maybe more interesting characters in this segment of the podcast. So again, you can choose who we're going to begin with. I know, I think we should start with the poet, maybe.
Okay, let's start with the poet. Okay, yeah, we're walking backwards, yeah.
Okay, so, who is this gentleman? What's his name?
Okay, so he was a poet called Marco Sana. Well, it wasn't his real name, because he took his name from the names of his parents, Marcos and Ana.
Okay.
So that wasn't his real name. I can't really remember his real name.
Okay.
Well, he was a poet. He's a bit of a contested figure. The people know him mostly for having been the longest prisoner in Franco's dictatorship. So he kind of like has the record for that.
Well, he was put in jail because he was a murderer, no?
He was put in jail because he allegedly murdered two or three people in a village. When he was, if I remember correctly, 13 or 14 years old, he was very young. So he was under the legal age, basically, when he committed the murder. There were some witnesses that said it being him. There were some other people that said it being framed. And, I guess even now, like so many things from the beginning of the Civil War, people are still arguing about what really happened.
It's fascinating that someone that young was pulled into the conflict. I mean, if it happened today, people, the discourse would be about, the radicalization of young men. Maybe he would be absolved a little bit more, or the attitude towards him in some quarters would be softer because, well, he was gotten to at a young age and maybe warped a little bit or his, or influenced, you know, before he could become a man. Also, we know as well statistically that young men between the ages of, I don't know, maybe 19, 20 and 24 are more likely to murder somebody because they're in that age bracket where, again, they probably don't fully appreciate the consequences of their actions, and especially in a very polarizing political climate, you have people even
more easily impressed.
But more easily swayed. You know, there's a great podcast, a TED talk about a former jihadi fighter who trained other people to enact or act out attacks in a jihadi style, and he basically renounces ways, you know. But, you know, there's a lot of young men who are kind of get swept up by these things. And now I think we have the vocabulary and the understanding to talk about it. Mm-hmm. But back then, of course, that never was the framing of the discussion. You know, you're a murderer, especially if you're murdering common.
I think in this particular case, one of the people that were allegedly murdered by him was a priest. So within the context of the
dictatorship, it was
the confrontation of those days with, like, communists and Catholic people and all that. This was deemed to be one of these confrontations. I believe as well that his father was murdered by kind of like people from the other side, and he sort of like went back home to find his father dead. Shot or whatever.
And did the alleged murders happen within a very close time frame to him discovering the father's murder? We're not sure about that. Okay, so but in prison, he spent a long time there, decades upon decades, and he wrote a lot of poetry. Was his poetry expressing guilt or renouncing of any ideas or tiredness or was it politicized? Was it about the sanctity of life or what did he touch on? What themes?
Well,
did he...
the poetry, and this is completely my personal point of view, but the poetry, what it transmits is peace. You know, it's like a will for freedom, and you know, to be in touch with nature, with the world, with people, like all the things that you're missing when you're locked away. But it's not, I don't find it like, you know, bitter or revengeful at all. I just find it more like throughout all his poems, throughout all the time, he's basically constantly saying how, you know, he's still sort of like holding on to that, those feelings, those nice feelings about love, about freedom.
So he's quite a philosophical and enlightened writer.
I think his poems are pretty simple, if you want to say it that way. I mean, they're not abstract or obscure. It's just, you know, very plainly saying, well, I'm missing these things. And also talking constantly about how important freedom is for a human being.
Again, these things are essential truths. No, they don't need to be always adorned by metaphor or complex language.
Well, I think
language.
When they're stripped of everything else, they're actually far more powerful. Well,
exactly. It's that poem Invictus that was used quite liberally throughout the movie of the same name, you know, Invictus. I mean, that is a poem that's symbolic of what people feel about freedom and especially being locked inside. And it's quite a simple one as well, or even if by Rudyard Kipling isn't so complex. But, you know, he passed away. It wasn't really marked in a wide way, but some people did react to it negatively. But before we touch on that, do you think that this is a character who should be revered in the same light that someone like Nelson Mandela should be revered in? Because, you know, Nelson Mandela committed acts, you know, I know this gentleman allegedly committed these acts, so we don't know for sure if he did. But he became a pillar or a symbol of stoicism, of being a peace-loving person. You know, of being incarcerated, even though he was because he was a political prisoner, for example, like his poet was as well. So you know, in one quarter, we've people like Nelson Mandela who are deified, you know, or who are put on a pedestal a little bit. Well, no, that sounds negative. I mean, they deserve to be respected so much, but do you think this guy should be should be respected like in this way as well, because he was put in prison. He reacted quite elegantly, you know, through his poetry, through his emotions, through his reactions to it all. But nobody celebrating him as a champion of the human spirit in difficult situations or of his political ideals.
Well, I wouldn't say like no one celebrating him, but it's not a mainstream thing, and I think the issue is that his ideas were like really strong, like even throughout his life, and even when he came out of prison, he still had a very strong communist ideas, and well, of course, many people didn't agree with this. I think, you know, for people that were more sympathize more with his ideals, of course he was kind of like a bit of a, well, not a hero, but, you know, bit of a figure, reference. And,
okay, and there was one newspaper that called him, was it a terrorist when he died, or?
Communist murderer, yeah, communist murderer. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay.
This all came from a campaign that was orchestrated a few years ago from a certain paper, kind of like, you know, that didn't like the fact that the left was kind of like bringing back his figure and making him more legitimate, like you were saying before.
It seems to be a bit of a theme at the moment, character assassination from right to left, mm-hmm. the right media, conservative media, trying to take down the sticker cows at the left. It's happening with the film director, whose name is?
Trevor.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So he is considered to be quite liberal. He mentioned recently that he doesn't feel Spanish. Yeah. And there's a huge boycott of his...
of his recent movies.
The presenter Salvados, no?
As well.
So he's interviewed Matthew Fomenda, and also he's done a story on Mercadona, no?
Yes.
And that's
which didn't go down well either.
No, and these are people who are left, but not extremely or cynically left. These are people who have their ideology that you may disagree with, of course. It's a democracy, but they're not extremists in any sense of the word and have very cogent and very clear ideas.
Well, not in my opinion, but yeah. In any case, you know, you could argue the same about other media and other people that... from my point of view, you know, are very extreme in their right ideals. So,
well, that's the thing. I think we have a climate where you can be extreme and conservative and right and get away with it. It's more.
Yeah. But I mean, extreme. You know, when we're talking like, you know, like to me, extreme is, I don't know, sort of like Trump style extreme. You know, you're actually making statements like out of the blue about things, not expressing your opinion, not even like. You know, interviewing, documenting things, or, you know.
There's a lot of bitterness and just threats and angry and ugly language and campaigns to denounce somebody or to denigrate them in some way. And, you know, I think it's a very ugly thing because, for example, that politician in Britain who got murdered, Cox, you know, after she got murdered, 50,000 tweets were sent supporting her assassin, you know. So when does it become okay, we don't like this director because he's a leftist, you know, and then where's the line where you can cross over and it becomes something even more sinister? Because I think that's even already sinister enough. But going back to this poet, his legacy, for the most part, hasn't really been in the mainstream after his death, but there has been some quarters that have attacked it, which brings us to the last person we're going to talk about in this podcast, which is something similar. It is again representative of something that's between right and left, no? With the right attacking the left, and maybe you can set the scene for us.
Well, in this case, I mean, it was just the accidental death of a politician who was being trialed at that time, well, actually the day before. She was being tried for alleged corruption. Basically, the rest of her team had already been on trial and had already, you know, are already there's a legal process against them. And she was basically in charge of them all. And so far, she managed to avoid going to court because in Spain, senators are protected by law, you know, from going to ordinary court. So it takes a petition from the High Court to actually be able to even call somebody to declare.
So there's a minute of silence for her in the parliament, no?
Yeah.
But Amos refused to be there, I suppose.
Yeah.
No? But you know, probably a cynical move from the people who organised it, no? Because during her life, towards the end, she was a bit sidelined by her party.
Yeah.
And now that she's passed on, maybe being used as a political football to score a point against Podemos, maybe it was a trap, you know, or maybe it was just a pious, sanctimonious kind of event to organize. Whatever the motivation for it, Podemos didn't go, and they've been attacked again by certain sections of the media. But you know, if they blew their nose, they would be attacked by the right wing press in Spain. So I mean, is this much ado about nothing, or is the general consensus, even amongst people who don't normally criticize them, a bit negative against them for this and for others, maybe stunts that they have been pulling recently, where they haven't been you know, they've been making it difficult basically for people to support them, I think, at the moment.
Yeah, well, I think I've heard a lot of people that identify themselves more with like leftist ideals saying that they're not happy with you know, how they behave or how they go about expressing their opinions. I mean, I think it is today they were being interviewed and they were saying that the problem is in Spain we're not used to like people making a stand against the establishment. And I believe that's true. But also I think, I don't know, there's a point to be made of the fact that, you know, it's fair enough to make a stand about things that are not right or that you don't believe in or that you want to change. But, you know, it's another thing basically... you know, going against things every time there is an issue, because I'm not saying that's what they're doing, but that's what it seems like at the moment, you know, that they...
Well, it's a critical moment for them where I think they can capitalize on PSOE's demise or kind of internal struggles. But I mean, yeah, for example, they didn't applaud the king when he was...
Yeah.
Giving a speech, but that again makes sense because they're Republicans.
Yeah, they're Republicans, and I mean that's.
But the Constitution Day is on the 6th of December, which is next week. They're not going. Well, they will be in attendance, but perhaps not officially. They're not communicating their sense in that at the moment very clearly. But again, that just more of a grey area, because I think you could be a Republican or a leftist, but also have respect for the Constitution.
Yeah, yeah.
So they're alienating.
Think as well, like, I think they alienate some people because, well, basically the Constitution is the only, you know, people based to appoint.
Yeah.
I think that we have in the so-called establishment. So.
Yeah. Well, the thing
it's meant to be something shared by everybody. It definitely needs changing and reforming, but.
I don't agree what their policy is, but I think at least they're being consistent, and. You can say, okay, I don't agree with it, but it's a strategy. But, you know, the right wing are just so childish when they are dealing with this thing. You know, if they don't applaud for the king, there's a storm, you know, and they lose their heads completely. And it just, I think it sometimes it reaches, in lots of countries, but here as well, a ridiculous situation where the conservatives just twirl their ties out of the pram if they feel that, you know, there's been an insult against the flag or against the king or against the state, you know, their precious, very limited perception of what Spain is, you know, and unfortunately that's something that's widespread throughout Europe and in the United States, or the world as well at the moment, you know, very precious people who are trying to guard a very limited view of what, you know, in this case a Spanish identity is, and they're not letting other people demonstrate it. And like you said, maybe in Spain it's not... You know, it's not typical for people to express ideas that are anti-establishment, you know?
But I think you definitely made a very valid point earlier on to me, off microphone, which was that, well, you know, if people don't feel identified with that concept of being Spanish, for example, well, they must the most push for...
Well, they have to reclaim it.
Yeah, exactly. So it's not enough with just, you know, expressing that they don't like what's out there.
Well, I think in that sense, maybe Podemos are trying to reclaim it because they are acting. It's not as if they're, you know, there's a level of inaction. They actually are acting. And even though you mightn't agree with what they're doing, I think you could say, yes, they're trying to reclaim Spanish identity, and they've said that in speeches before, but they're trying to do that. But the director, but the director, for example, who said he wasn't Spanish, he still takes grants and prizes from the establishment, you know. So to be honest, he's full of shit because because I mean, it's, well, as an artist, as a movie maker, a filmmaker, it's possible to make films independently and according to your political beliefs, you know. I mean, just look again at Ken Loach, and we've done a podcast about him recently as well. And you know, if you didn't feel Spanish, you know, but you're still in the system and still taking money and grants and prizes from people, you're not, I think it's a very toxic mix, because you can feel superior without actually really doing anything. And he needs to, people like that, I think, have to make more of an effort to, if you don't feel Spanish, it's confusing for me, because I don't know how people can feel like they're from a place or don't have an identity. If you don't like a version of it, you know, do something and try and reclaim it, you know. I think that's an obligation that we all share and have to honor, you know, because it's something that's been given to us, and it's something that has to be protected. So, you know, I mean, if anything, these tree deaths have, I mean Fidel Castro, even though we're not talking about him, you know, some people, 9 days of mourning in Cuba, parties in Miami, you know. So apart from Lope de Vega, you know, who's not very polarizing, you know, or even Boy early in the year, you know, Leonard Cohen, obviously everybody's unanimous in their praise. But there have been recent deaths that have been controversial, that affect and you know, relate to modern Spain, no, and this eternal battle between left and right, which happens here, but also, of course, elsewhere, no. So
definitely, yeah.
Okay, well, you've heard a story. So we've spoken about Lope de Vega,
Marcos Ana,
and
well, Rita Olvera was the politician.
Okay, so a lot of lives there, full of incident and drama. So if you're interested in more, Google Wikipedia or go to the library. So that's the end of part two. After that, so thank you for bearing with us for that long, winding, but ultimately interesting conversation about all things otherworldly, taking in politics, culture, and poetry. So anything to add before we finish this little podcast, Aruni?
Just to keep an eye on our Twitter feed to see the things that the things that we've been doing and the things that we're gonna be doing.
See, our Twitter feed, we're up to 809 followers.
Wow.
We're stuck on 790 for a few months. So I think by Christmas 2016, 17 even, we might break that 1,000 mark. So we also have a video of Charlie Chaplin. I interviewed him with Maria being the camera woman in Seoul 2 weeks ago. That's also on YouTube. First week down, we have almost 70 views. Oh yeah. So that can only grow, hopefully. And we're going to be bringing more videos, possibly before Christmas, but definitely after Christmas we're going to be jam packing with videos. And what's our next project going to be, video wise
next project, well, we're going to give you a clue by posting a picture on Twitter.
Okay,
how about that?
Very good. Very good. I like that. So, starting the podcast, talking about Christmas hampers, and ending it with that clue, which is also food-related. That's another clue.
Yeah.
Trying it for free. So that El Apra podcast saying bye bye for another week. So that those sleigh bells and jingle bells and are coming a little bit closer, and we'll be talking to you, of course, next week. So
bye.
Bye. You're listening to Subsound Radio. We bring you streaming and live broadcasting from the capital. This is the El Apra podcast.